Warning, Star Trek Discovery spoilers ahead. Warning, Star Trek Discovery spoilers ahead.
It is time. In every revolution, there's one man with a vision.
Captain Kirk,
I shall consider it.
Now, whom pods destroy.
Welcome back to Whom Pods Destroy. We were in our last episode talking about Mirror Mirror. This episode we're going to be talking about the Mirror Universe, what happened afterwards, Mirror Mirror's legacy. And also some other Star Trek related concepts that are close to Mirror Mirror, but not part of that Mirror Universe. Let's begin with a question for you guys. Have you ever seen or heard of Star Trek Continues?
I'm aware of it.
You're aware of it? Are you aware of it?
Star Trek. Oh, yes.
Star Trek Continues. Yes, so this is Vic Mignania's project to make a fourth season of the original series. It's a fan. There is a fan film. It's 1 hour-ish in length. And they are remarkable. And not everybody watches fan films. Not everyone likes them. This, with the Star Trek Continues series, is interesting because it is basically... It's the Enterprise crew, so you know they're different actors playing the characters we're familiar with. So in that respect, it can be quite jarring because you know they're playing different characters, and it takes a bit of getting used to. And I would imagine that for some people, it just wouldn't be for them at all. Actually, they do, however, do a sequel to Mirror Mirror, and the reason why I just wanted to touch this off is because it's a good touching off point because we ended our last episode talking about the final scene, but with Kirk delivering a speech to Spock to persuade him to lead a revolution against the Empire in the Mirror Universe. And that is used as the cold open for the beginning of this sequel episode. It's called The Fairest of Them All, I think. And it tells a story about what happens next. And this scene that they do is recreated shot for shot, and light for light, and eyebrow raise for eyebrow raise. Somebody actually put them up against each other in YouTube, and it is extraordinary how close they got that and matched that. I use that to illustrate the extraordinary power that this episode Mirror Mirror had and legacy it had. And I don't think that there is a episode of Star Trek that probably has a big a legacy, I think, as Mirror Mirror, I suspect, in terms of additional content, both canon and side canon and non-canon, that's been created than anything else.
I agree. I mean, is it a good episode, this Star Trek Continues?
I enjoyed it, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, so I enjoyed it. Recommend... But again, I stress it, this sort of thing is not for everyone. But it is for me. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. I think the measure, of some Star Trek episodes is the amount that they're parodied. And Mirror Mirror is one of the episodes that sits high amongst them, isn't it, really? With the level of parody.
Well, we all laugh at our goatee beards.
Well,
we
do, exactly. Well, yeah. The goatee beard has almost become a meme, isn't it, for alternative versions of people.
Yes.
I think which was best perhaps used in South Park.
South Park, Cartman. Yeah. Cartman and his goatee beard.
Yeah.
Unforgettable. Scenes, yeah.
And obviously, like, the Cartman from the Mirror Universe is actually nice, which made it hilarious. But this is one of the things, and also the whole the memes of the fascistic salutes and everything, which was actually probably that I like to think that the whole sort of feel of Mirror Mirror borrows a lot from Flash Gordon.
Yeah, it does really have that sort of aesthetic, doesn't it? It's got the, with obviously the salutes, but it's also the costumes, because they're sort of slightly more ornate over the top. And in fact, the thing is, Spock's, you said, loungewear.
It does look a bit mingy, doesn't it?
It does. That's what I was saying.
With the goatee beard.
It would have been interesting if they had persuaded him to wear a skull cap. He'd have been rocking the Mirror
Universe.
Fu Manchu, yeah, maybe not. I think he more mean the Merciless.
Yeah, but
same thing, really.
But I think because it does go into this sort of, it sort of borders parody itself, where it's parodying other forms of science fiction, that it almost becomes free reign for people to look at it and take ideas from it. So, right, okay, this is you parodying, self-parodying yourself almost. It is, so you're... this is something we can use, and you can use it because it is such a rich source, isn't it?
The funny thing is that the Mirror Mirror as an episode isn't funny. Do you see what I mean?
It's there is actually, funny elements in it. As we said in the previous podcast, when they have that whole when they zoom in on Kirk, like, what's happening on my ship, and everything is going but, fine, and when you see Kirk, Mirror Kirk, actually beating up in the brig and saying, like, you know,
Mirror Kirk's beating off at the brig in the brig.
Beating the walls. Yeah.
Don't worry. In last episode, you also mentioned something about pirates. This reminded you of Harlan Ellison's original treatment of City on the Edge of Forever, space pirates.
Yeah, well, in our previous episode, which is going back probably about half a year ago.
City on the Edge of Forever one.
We were talking about this alternate universe. There was a original part in the script where, after the Guardian of the Galaxy changes. Oh, actually, sorry.
Guardian of the Galaxy.
Yeah, okay. It's the Guardian.
The Guardian of Forever.
The Guardian of Forever. Sorry, guys, that's my extra podcast. Derek's science fiction crossover bloopers.
I am Groot.
But the Guardian of Forever. Do you remember the things when the guy, I can't remember the actual, McCoy in the TV series, there was another crewman who actually changes time.
Yes.
And then the crew is stranded on the planet, so they have to go back up, and when they finally get up onto the Enterprise, it's not actually the Enterprise, it's actually a pirate ship, you know, and they're actually fighting off pirates.
So idea of creation of alternate realities, not really a new concept by the time Mirror Mirror comes along, is it? Because we had City on the Edge of Forever, which would have gone down that road were it not for the fact that they actually decided just to stay on the planet and not
The thing
explore
about
that area.
Alternate realities, it's also, everyone's really interested in alternative histories. Now, within the golden years of science fiction, there was all of these stories about what happens if someone goes back and kills Hitler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea about changing time and having this, an alternative parallel universe. Mm. And we did sort of discuss it in our last episode where we were trying to work out the sort of, the points, the point, and we were talking about sort of like whether it was like Roman,
what if the Roman Empire had never fallen, and things like that. Concepts like that,
which are always in Star Trek. But the thing of the idea about the genesis of where did our timeline or the parallel universe split? I'm running ahead of ourselves because we were, you know, talking about sort of the influence, but. There is an episode in Enterprise where they actually show a sort of jumping off point that could have happened.
Yes, that's right. At the beginning of in A Mirror Darkly, they recreate the end of Star Trek First Contact, where the Vulcans land to meet Zephyr and Cochrane, or indeed Cochrane, if you will. Maybe in the Mirror Universe, he is Zephyr and Cochrane. And of course, I don't know, I mean, if you guys have seen that episode, but yeah, it doesn't go the same way that it goes at the end of First Contact.
There's he
shoots him. Yeah, he shoots them, and they storm.
We come in peace.
Yeah, yeah. There's no Roy Orbison at all in that sequence. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe because Roy Orbison.
Maybe Roy
was
Orbison
never born.
Died in that fire.
Roy, yeah. So there was no. We don't. The Mirror Universe is a world without Roy Orbison.
Oh, well, that's
and that's
difference.
Why. That's right, the difference. Okay. So now we know. So there you go.
This is the butterfly effect. Isn't it?
It
did. Which was another 1950s comic, wasn't it?
Well, there is. It was. Was it Asimov actually did the thing about the butterfly effect where time travel? There's tourists who go back in time to kill dinosaurs. And the idea is that you're not supposed to deviate from the paths that have been created for these tourists that are allowed to go around and shoot a dinosaur. The idea, you can shoot a dinosaur because you won't change time because they're dead already. But what happens by accident, someone treads on a butterfly and then they go back to their present. Hmm. And then when they get back to their present, they find that when they get there, all the human beings are actually descended from dinosaurs. They're all lizard people.
Oh, cool. Saurians.
Yeah, Saurians.
Yeah, big fan of
which
that.
Which is
big
a great...
We're seeing there's a Saurian turns up in the end of that Discovery trailer, doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
Which is very exciting. Linus. And great
the snotty
name
Linus,
as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, great name as well. Yeah, yeah. Distant Origin, the Voyager episode, of course, sort of like plays with that idea of dinosaurs being related to where the crew of the Voyager encounter a dinosaur race, an evolved dinosaur race, and realize that they're actually from the same planet.
Well, we have that in Doctor Who as well.
Very groovy. Very groovy indeed.
But the whole concept,
the Cylorians.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
But the whole concept of alternate universes isn't really the same as the mirror universe, is it?
No,
because because this is where something happens in the past and the whole of fate goes in a different direction.
But it doesn't have to be a big thing.
So that's not,
no, it doesn't
changes.
Have to be a big
yeah,
thing.
But in the mirror universe.
But in the mirror universe, it's basically everyone is where they are at that time, aren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah.
Whenever you go in there, the people who are in one seat in one universe are in that same seat, just the rest of the universe is slightly different.
Yeah, they're
so
wearing different clothes,
it is a universe where calls doesn't really reach effect.
Yeah. So funny enough,
because effect is coming from the same.
And this is the other thing that's worth bearing in mind is that they're parallel universes, so they never were connected at any point. So when we're looking for the kind of jumping off point as to what made things different, that never happened. They're completely different universes, different dimensions.
Yeah. I suppose that's the interesting thing, because you can't. There is in quantum, you know, physics and theories and stuff like this. There is that idea that there are parallel universes that go right along beside us, but there's also the idea that things do split off as well.
Yes,
new parallel universes,
as now, explored in the TNG episode Parallels. If you remember that one,
yes,
where
that Worf
moves between different
he comes back
parallel
on the
universes,
shuttle,
after having one champion standing, and then he realizes that he came in ninth place the next time around.
Oh,
yeah, and that's a crack. That's a good disappointing that he didn't spend some time in the actual mirror universe though. I wonder whether or not they missed a trick there.
Yeah.
Maybe they deliberately avoided it. No, we're not going to go down that.
But I was going back to the idea that the sort of people are still in the mirror universe. People are still where they're supposed to be. Now I love that idea, because there is the idea about sort of all parallel universes that run side by side. I mean, there is a theory that in other parallel universes, something is slightly different with physics. So the idea that maybe you'll have a parallel universe where gravity is slightly heavier than another than the universe that we're in at the moment. So obviously things are slightly more laboured, or maybe people develop slightly differently, or maybe the starlight is different. And this is the interesting thing that we've all watched Discovery.
We have.
Yes.
Now there is one little thing that's there at the end.
Spoiler alert.
That,
spoiler alert.
Well, no, I'm not going to try and
spoil it.
Okay, spoiler alert. But the idea that the actual light in the parallel in the mirror universe is actually different from in the universe that we're in.
Yeah. It is literally a dark universe.
Dark universe.
Yeah.
And the thing is that will also affect people's mood. Maybe they need to have more sunlight, some vitamin D, and they would all be really happy people.
Well, of course, that doesn't happen because, as we know, Lorca spends a great deal of time in the other universe. Mirror Lorca spends quite a lot of time in the other universe, and his mood doesn't seem to improve at all.
In fact, it probably makes him even worse.
If anything, yes. Yeah, I mean, because
I don't know. I thought he was a bit. He was. There are certain bits that he's quite. You know, maybe he's less.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he looks after his crew, you know.
Yeah, because he needs to. He needs them in order to achieve his goals. So I don't know whether or not. I mean, he kind of acknowledges.
But he's always in that dark.
Him.
But then again, he's always in his bloody dark room all the time, isn't
he? Yeah,
in
his dark room with his tribbles.
So, guys, the actual. The mirror universe that we're used to isn't actually a mirror universe. It's just a universe that's parallel.
A parallel universe.
But we are introduced to a mirror universe, aren't we? We are actually. There is, in the original series, a mirror universe.
It would be more accurate. No, please continue, but you're right. It would be more accurate to say that the actual mirror universe is in the episode...
Alternative Factor.
Alternative Factor. Comfortably the least popular episode in the history of Star Trek, I would suggest. Even everybody says it's Spock's brain, but that's for tourists.
can you
hipster Star Trek fans will tell you right now, the Alternative Factor is comfortably the least popular episode, but actually it's actually really good.
I just want to sort of make a an admission that I can't remember which episode this is. Can you explain?
We're going to talk. We'll tell you what. We'll leave it.
Oh,
there,
okay.
You know what we'll do, guys.
Yeah.
Next episode, alternative facts.
Oh, well, there you go.
So we'll leave that there.
So a little bit of homework
because there's stacks to talk about as well. But we're just dropping that in there. But I mentioned Parallels earlier. Worth pointing out that in Parallels, they introduced the concept of the RNA, which is a scientific concept, but the baseline that every dimension has a unique signature amongst us all. We're all bound together, everything. So this water bottle, our bodies, you know, and everything has the same RNA signature as the stars, as any, or as anything, as the entire universe, which is an awesome, mind-blowing concept.
Surrounds us, binds us, makes us whole.
Makes us whole, yeah. No,
I don't think they actually said that.
They didn't say that, no, because they didn't want to get sued. but that was carried over into the Discovery Mirror Universe, because that's how they realised they were in the wrong dimension when they moved to the Mirror Universe. They went, whoa, RNA, dude. Their RNA is not our RNA, which is quite cool. So Parallels, although didn't go into the Mirror Universe, does also have had a contribution to the continuation of the Mirror Universe saga. During the days when there was no Star Trek on, or hardly any Star Trek on, there was quite a lot of original fiction as there is now. And the Mirror Universe proved to be quite a popular topic even then. I was a voracious reader of the DC Star Trek comics, as you were, Delbert.
I was, yes.
And Mike Barr wrote actually quite serviceable Mirror Universe arc in between Star Trek's 2 and 3, when they had this gap, when they weren't quite sure what to do. They just spent 8 episodes talking about the Mirror Universe.
It's funny, it's fondly remembered.
And led into Star Trek 3, interestingly. So,
which was perfect because you could bring back Spock in the Mirror Universe, couldn't you?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Yeah, so it was. Have I got that right? Was it? No, it was after.
It was after Search for Spock. It was actually when they
were. I apologise. It was after Search for Spock.
Yeah. What they did was they bring back the Mirror Universe Spock. But there is a sequence where you've got Spock is still.
His mind is
messed up.
That's right. A mirror Spock helps
him heal him.
Yeah. So apologies. It's set immediately after Star Trek 3.
Ah.
So they spend 8 months on this big Mirror Universe arc while they're waiting to see what happens next, and then they go into the next phase of that. But it's actually, I mean, the renderings by comparison to modern Star Trek comics are pretty basic and
bluntly. Tom Sutton was the artist.
Yes, it was Tom Sutton and Ricardo Villagran.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's pretty messy.
Well, I don't know.
It was in the shallow end of DC's creative pool, wasn't it, really?
I'm afraid so. I hate to say. I mean, Tom Sutton is a. I have defended Tom Sutton on Facebook groups because people have been like, and a lot of it is because Ricardo Villagran's inks were so messy.
I think that was it.
Tom Sutton, in terms of like panel construction, and he knew how to tell a story. I mean,
he was a massive Star Trek fan. He was, because there was in the mid 1970s, there was a Marvel had this thing called Marvel Features, and they used to do one-off stories to start as a pilot for other series. We keep talking about pilots, but they did a thing called Seeker 3000.
You've told me about Seeker 3000.
Yeah, and it was their version of Star Trek. But it was.
Find me a picture of a front cover of that.
I will
and
do.
I'll put it on
I
our Instagram.
Do,
you know. We have an Instagram, listeners, believe it or not. We never use it, but we do have it.
But yeah, and they've got a ship which looks suspiciously like.
And that was Tom Sutton.
Yes.
Anyway, so there's that. Diane Duane, I remember reading a really good book by Diane Duane. I mentioned in the last episode called Dark Mirror, which is a TNG.
I read it at the same time as you, actually.
And it's a cracking piece of work. And Diane Duane's contribution to Star Trek universe is much missed, if she's listening. Mm-hmm. And if anybody on there is listening. And then, of course, we finally got canon return to the Mirror Universe in Crossover.
Now,
which is a DS9 episode from the third season.
Yeah, you see.
See, I'm going to lay my cards on the table here and say that I've never really took to those episodes, those Mirror Universe.
I concur. Well,
they sort of had one in each.
They did one for each season, didn't they?
Yeah.
Like we're going to have our Mirror episode.
Yeah, here. And I think the thing is, which is one of the main problems with Mirror Universe, is the fact that it's really just a chance for some of the characters to chew the scenery a bit with say, look at my range, darling, look.
Well, even worse than that, we were talking about the, you know, saying about like the Mirror Universe is adds a comedy aspect to it.
Yeah.
It's the thing that I don't like, because they turned the DS9 Mirror Universe into a comedy universe.
Yeah.
That's the thing I hate.
Yeah, no, by the end of it, it was literally a pantomime. Wasn't literally
yeah, it was pantomime,
but it acted like a pantomime. It came round every year, and it was an opportunity for serious actors to have some fun.
Yeah.
You know, and be out of character while in character.
Yeah, the Halloween show or whatever it is. But it was, it's like...
Yes, Halloween show, yeah.
Yeah, it is... Yeah, it's that sort of thing, though, isn't it? It's let's have a party, let's put on some costumes, and we're allowed to play someone else this time, but we can be the evil version of our mm-hmm. character. But I think it's like we talked about this in our James Bond podcast, haven't we? In the fact that during the 90s, there really wasn't a lot to worry about, was there? Really,
no.
This is why Pierce Brosnan got the short end of the stick, really, when it came to his films, and why they're not best remembered.
Yeah, because, we all thought we'd won, hadn't we?
Yeah, we all thought we'd won. Yeah, the Cold War was over, and this is pre 9/11, and so you know there is no problems in the world.
Yeah,
and so you could take something like the Mirror Universe and take the Mick out of it and use it as a comedy vehicle, whereas perhaps when it was originally thought of, you know, there were still enemies at the door, and there were still totalitarians the people in the Mirror Universe were people you could recognize and see, well, look, that's there but for a few things.
Absolutely. But I think that is one of the strengths of the Mirror Universe, it's a warning for all of us to say, look, we could all be like this under certain circumstances, and we wouldn't be able to have. There wouldn't be much we could do about it either.
Yeah.
But I think that the DS9 storylines the first episode crossover is decent enough.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's okay.
After that they become less and less memorable. There's the opportunity because like Ben Sisko becomes involved and he meets Jenny. That's an opportunity for him to revisit feelings from his wife, all of which is fine. But in terms of, in narrow terms of it being in a mirror universe, also the visuals, for me, the key thing about the mirror universe stories is the visuals. The visuals of the aesthetic is really that harsh, abrasive, you know, sort of like martial, fascistic kind of Starship Troopers kind of thing going on there. Really, really important for me when looking at a mirror universe, and it just isn't there with those DS9
ones. I think that's because the thing is, because it's on Terek Nor, it's already like that,
and it's like that anyway.
In the scene,
yeah, well, that's why, we're gonna say something
in the DS9 ones, they take it in a different direction as well, because obviously in Mirror Mirror, there is the swapping of characters, but. In DS9, they get to meet them.
Yeah,
they
do.
Yes,
the mirror self, don't
indeed,
they?
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
which blows away your theory of personality transference.
Yeah,
and that's why these
which is better.
Which is better
a concept.
It's just another reason for not liking those DS9 mirror universes.
Yeah, yeah. You shouldn't be able to meet like Lazarus. You shouldn't be able to meet them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, of course, and that happens right from the off because the two Kiras meet, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean that episode is engaging, and like those mirror universe episodes, they're not necessarily bad episodes. It's just that as mirror universe episodes goes, you know, they just don't seem terribly authentic, even though they are absolutely 100% authentic.
I mean, the only good thing that I found in those, I watched them recently. I didn't watch the Emperor's New Cloak because it started off with the Grand Nagus. And it's a Ferengi episode, so you know it's going to be just quite sort of lame.
You don't like the Ferengi?
I do like the Ferengi, but the thing
is that... the Grand Nagus?
Yeah, that was it.
Inconceivable!
Exactly, yeah.
Ah! Not talking for the Grand Ferengi!
Oh, have I just fallen into a mirror universe? With the Deep Space Nine ones, they got progressively worse, except for one sequence the only funny bit that I really liked was when Worf, the precinct, stabs Garak by accident. There is a good bit. Now that's a good comedy bit
you can appreciate the comedy while at the same time wishing that it wasn't there not what you want.
No,
listeners will have thoroughly enjoyed those episodes. Yeah. Will be disgusted.
Yeah, they will be top of their lists.
But,
as far
and we apologise to you for our opinions. But
you have a fondness for the Enterprise when they came back.
Well, I watched that recently.
Okay.
Very recently. In fact, I watched it yesterday. And I actually was quite disappointed with the episode.
Oh, really?
Okay. I mean, it's got some really good stuff going on there. And this also goes back to what we were talking about with Spock and the Vulcans in the Mirror Universe. They flesh out the relationship between the Terrans and the Vulcans more. And in the Mirror Darkly, which is obviously set in the Enterprise timeline period, the Vulcans are serving officers, but they are still regarded as a sort of like a subculture. They're a labor, or not a labor class, but yeah, they have been enslaved,
mm-hmm.
And don't enjoy the same rights, and indeed the rebellion that there's a rebellion that goes on during this time, and the Vulcans are very much part of that rebellion. There's this coalition of rebels, which we know is consistent with the DS9 storyline because it's a coalition of rebels that eventually overthrows the Terran Empire. And of course, it's consistent with the Discovery as well, because again, yes, the rebels there are a coalition of light, so to speak. So the genesis of that does, you know, that's all taken back to the Enterprise time period and used there. The clever thing about the story is that they use it as a sequel to it's also a sequel to the Tholian Web, because the USS Defiant, which falls in the third season in the Tholian Web, USS Defiant goes into an alternate. Disappears into an alternate universe, into another universe or another dimension, I think. And it's actually captured by the Tholians. And then the Mirror Enterprise captain, called Commander Archer, Jonathan Archer, finds out about it and steals it. And then hijinks ensue, lots of space battles, quite a lot of violence. And it in many ways, it's quite a good episode. It's got a very nice kind of thing where Archer is sort of being haunted by his mirror universe self, that because they find out about the Federation and he's clearly, you know, mentally disturbed as well. And it's a good episode also because finally Linda Park is given something to do, and she actually plays a pivotal role in that. And the Doctor's in it as well. We get an opportunity to see what a Doctor is like in the mirror universe, because Dr. Phlox superbly plays, you know, this incredibly cruel. And Malcolm Reed is just as terrible in the Mirror Universe as it is in the if you listen to our bonus episode, you'll know mine and Zoe's opinion on Malcolm Reed, but he's got this odd little subplot going on in the second part of it with the Gorn, which I don't like, because it's a CGI Gorn, and I just get the impression it's like you're massively short by about 15 minutes, aren't you, on your script, so you're going to have to drop in a subplot about trying to find some kind of doohickeys that a Gorn slave driver is just, you know, it grated ever so slightly, didn't quite work. Okay. So, but I mean, the visuals are quite consistent. The Enterprise uniforms are sort of like, you know, cut slightly differently, but it still for me lacks that visual jarringness, that sense of familiarity and yet difference.
Like
the original series stuff had. I mean, John D.F. Black is the costume. Is it? No, sorry, Bill Feist is the costume designer for the original series.
Yeah,
and the way that he just slightly makes those adjustments works so much better than anything that we've seen afterwards, with the exception of Discovery, which I'll talk about in a second. But that they still, for me, they don't make that. It's not that jarring. It just doesn't quite work for me. The aesthetics are still not quite right. Okay.
I have got a little bit of trivia about that, actually.
Let's hear it.
It's the thing. It was Manny Coto, who obviously did the last series and was filling up with all the things he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Originally, they were in negotiations with William Shatner to go on to Enterprise. And the idea was is that the Tantalus web, not Tantalus web,
the Tantalus field, yeah,
wasn't actually killing people, or disintegrating them. Was actually sending them to an alternative universe, which was the Prime universe.
Sending them back
as well. I mean, that's the bit, and the idea was is that there was a penal colony in the Prime universe where all of these people had been sent to. So the idea that they're saying that actually Kirk had been on there for quite a few years, so obviously he was older as well.
Right.
And there were actually negotiations to actually get Shatner to appear on it. But obviously it fell through in the end. So instead of doing that, they decided to do the... use some of the same idea, but using the Tholian web to put the... the Defiant back in time, because that's the thing that got me as well. Is it goes back in time as well as going,
yeah, that's right. Yeah,
you know, which
yeah,
is...
there's that. Yes, yeah. So, I mean, it's a bit of a leap, but I mean, yeah. I think it's quite. I thought it was quite an interesting way of sort of like connecting the Enterprise with the original series, and very consistent with just generally speaking how that series went down.
Yeah,
Enterprise is a much loved fourth season. The fourth season of Enterprise is much loved, but for me, it strays too much into fan fiction.
Well, this is the other thing was that
to be truly enjoyable.
Yeah. Manny Cota wanted to expand the Mirror Universe thing to actually have a whole series of it. Well, or at least there would be a undercurrent of the episodes joining up to actually make to have.
That's kind of what happened.
Yes, I think it is.
I mean, it's worth bringing up just quickly before we move on. Those In a Mirror Darkly episodes, they changed the title sequences as well. They changed the footage and the theme tune for the title sequences to reflect the fact that this was whole episode was set in the Mirror Universe, because there's no crossover. The only crossover you get is the delusion, Jonathan Archer's delusion that his other self is goading him and taunting him and leaning over his shoulder. That's the only reference that you ever get to the fact that you never see any of the others. There's no wraparound story or anything like that. It is a purely exists solely in the Mirror Universe.
And that was the best thing about it was they got rid of that bloody theme music, didn't they?
Right.
He's going to rip me a new one.
I'm going to stand up right about that theme. I don't know how you could dislike that theme. I think ownership is very, very important when it comes to the Enterprise thing. And I have to tell you right now, that the biggest mistake they ever made with that thing was actually getting rid of the vocals. It's like, you've done this. You've done it. The die is cast. You've made this choice. Right? You've got to stick to your guns and go for it. And for me, it exemplifies exactly what happened to Enterprise, it just lost its way.
Because of the
It just lost its bottle. Yeah, and it didn't even have the guts to keep Russell Watson. Yeah, I mean, I think it's shit. But at the same time, it was there, and like, I thought, no. And then when they changed it, you went, oh, you cowards. I have even less respect for you now. You know, at least I respected you for sticking to your gun, saying, no, up yours, mate. We're sticking with Russell Watson.
The problem is, I think he's directing that all at us.
I do feel that way. But do you know what? There is a universe out there where they did stick
with
it.
And
do you know what? Yeah. There's a universe out there where it went to the full 7 series.
When it went to a full 7 series, yeah. And Jeff Combs got it. Because when the tragedy of it all was, as you may be aware, I'm a massive fan of Jeff Combs, the actor. The Star Trek actor, and he played Tran in Enterprise, and he was awesome.
Oh, yes,
and he was due to be made series regular in series 5, and none of that happened. So there's a universe where that happened. Let's talk about Discovery. I think we might be overrunning. I don't know. Yeah. What time is it?
It's 10 to 2.
Let's talk about the Discovery.
This is what everyone episodes. Really wants to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, this for me, I think, aesthetically, they've got this bang on. I mean, like, it, obviously, it is quite different to the TOS, but it's going to be. But I mean, in terms of really setting it apart, and they obviously have a ton of money to spend, and it looks really, really good. And I think they've got that little arc that they did there was really good.
Mm.
I really liked they emphasised more on how Michael Burnham was coping with existing in that universe, and what she could feel it doing to her was really interesting. It goes back to what we've been talking about how these environments that we live in define our personalities in the way that we are, and that we are the kind of people that we are because of the environment in which we live. And Burnham could feel herself becoming a deviant, becoming perverted, becoming cruel and unpleasant, because she was forced to do it day after day, and it was sapping her soul. And I thought that was a very important element of that storyline, to just try and to illustrate what the Mirror Universe actually is and how relevant it is as well.
Yeah.
Because there's a stack of relevance as well. I mean, it's made contemporary. Yeah. I mean, it's no secret, this is a progressive liberal franchise that looks probably at the current US administration, mm-hmm. doesn't agree with it, and is worried about what it's doing to people.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that, and there's a couple of speeches. There's that one speech I think that Lorca makes. I don't remember it word for word, but it's clearly issuing a warning to the American people about the road that they're going down.
Yeah.
And it's not really that much of a metaphor, to be honest with you. It's pretty on the nose.
Yeah, basically, it's totally. Anti-Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as Derek was saying, where DS9 treated the Mirror Universe as something comedic.
Yeah.
Now we've got a mirror universe that we should be scared of.
Yes.
And, you know, this is the path that we could all go down.
Yeah, the message is, look, if we're not careful, this is the world we're going to create for ourselves.
Yeah.
Not the other one.
Yeah.
This one.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really powerful message. I mean, I think that's why it was important to include it. I mean, from an artistic, purely artistic, creative point of view, you could say, well, look, it's a little bit early to be introducing a mirror universe when we hardly know these characters.
Mm.
But, I mean, no, at the same time, you know, they obviously felt there was a really important story that needed to be told.
And actually, as the story unfolds, and I'm sure if you haven't watched it, you'll have stopped by now, hopefully. But as the story unfolds, it works because you don't know the characters that well.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And that's what makes absolutely. It yeah. perfect to introduce.
Yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, it's almost as if the writers knew what that. They were doing. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Almost as if they're professional writers who know what they're doing.
I don't know if you were like me, when you first came to it, obviously you really wanted some good Star Trek when you watched the first episode, and I moaned about the Klingons and everything.
Yep, so did I.
And then the thing is that obviously when we get Captain Lorca, you know, he was quite a jarring character to anyone who liked Star Trek. You know, he was, you know, he was militaristic, he was secretive, all this sort of stuff, and you know, he didn't look like a good captain. You know, he was a bad captain. He was a war captain, but that was the thing. That's what got into my head. I actually thought that he was a war captain rather than, and I got caught
just a hawk rather than.
I got caught off guard with the Mirror Universe stuff.
It completely. My big inkling of it was at the end of the first season break.
Yes. Yeah,
when they had the break, and they think, and I thought, and they came back, and I thought they'd gone into another universe. They've gone into another mirror universe. They've gone into either the mirror universe or another. I'm sure that's what's going to happen. But that's just because I've watched far too much Star Trek.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
But when you, obviously, you go back and rewatch those Lorca in those earlier episodes. And of course, now you understand completely that he's the mirror. Because you already know. And then you can see the clues and the visual clues. And that's the glorious thing about this, is that, you know, up until this year or last year, Star Trek was made to be watched once, and all the way through, because the understanding was that most people would just watch it on linear TV. They'd sit on their asses and watch the television. Discovery is made to be watched and then rewatched and then rewatched, and so the skill in the writing and the production is to be able to leave these things for people to be able to then appreciate upon subsequent viewing. It really is an excellent TV show.
Yeah. The first time I noticed that sort of way of writing was actually Doctor Who, when it came back. You know, with Russell T. Davis.
Yeah.
He was doing all of those sort of bits, leaving things throughout.
Leaving breadcrumbs,
all the way throughout the first.
For us to appreciate,
That was the first time it was obvious that sort of like that. This has become a thing.
Well, that was
that you do.
Yeah, and the
now,
the payoff when we finally understand who Lorca really is, then we do get these little flashbacks, these breadcrumbs.
Yeah. But this is the time that we would be rewatching stuff. I mean, when we used to watch all the you know, when the VHS stuff, when we used to watch those every...
But most people didn't do that.
No, they didn't. No.
I mean, only, you know, Star Trek fans.
This was the very early days of TV series having a story arc, wasn't it?
Yes.
And now every series has to have a story. You can't...
To the extent where you can't... Well, I think it's turning around.
Yeah.
I think the fact that shows like The Twilight Zone are getting revivals, and also Black Mirror... Yeah. You know, I mean, I think there's an appetite for anthology-based fiction coming back.
So,
I think
and also, have, yeah, maybe but, the next series of Discovery might start doing more traditional Trek.
Indicated that they might, so we'll see what happens.
But there will be an override. There will be an arc going there. But
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of the Mirror Universe, then I mean, I think that for me, this is the most faith. This is certainly the most faithful rendition, if you like, of the Mirror Universe. It links nicely back to that original series, but it does also have parts in it that acknowledge the other parts, you know, so the DS9 mirror stuff is there with the sort of the rebellion, similarly with the in the Mirror Darkly. It does really well, because one of the criticisms from a Trekkie point of view of Discovery is that it's too separated visually from the rest of them, and that it's a bit too jarring. But actually, the Mirror Universe sells quite well to connect us with the Prime Universe a lot better, because it actually relies quite a lot on the heritage of earlier episodes to bring in to its storyline. So it works really well. It's proper Star Trek from a fan point of view, because it utilizes canon. Mm-hmm. I mean, it recognizes the existence of Deep Space Nine, of TOS, of Enterprise, and it doesn't stand alone.
Mm.
I like those early seasons of TNG where Roddenberry almost eschewed all the other Star Trek that had gone on beforehand. Discovery has not done that. And not everybody appreciates that.
And also, it's brought back big time the threat of this. You know, it was edge of your seat stuff when you were watching it. You know, the new Mirror Universe.
Yeah, I mean, it was proper fearsome stuff,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It was.
And of
was...
course, Michelle Yeoh returned as the Emperor. Empress, and
that sequel, I mean, again, you were talking about sort of Uhura's sort of situation of being the lone person on the deck.
Yeah.
You had the same thing with Michael Burnham.
Yes.
She has to do that same thing out there to infiltrate.
Yeah. Become someone she doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
And,
Well, you know, she has to literally murder a guy. In the lift while she's on her way up to the bridge.
Yeah.
And I mean, and again, you know, I'll issue a spoiler warning before. So I mean, it doesn't really get any darker than that, does it?
No.
Doesn't really signal to the viewer, you know, this shit's real.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not going to have Worf, you know, comedy stabbing other people. This is going to be, you know, serious business.
Yeah,
serious.
It would have been hugely powerful had Uhura done that in Mirror Mirror if she'd stabbed Sulu, but that's then,
would have been
that would have taken the episode into a place where perhaps it didn't really have to go.
I don't think you needed to. I think you're right, but I mean, like, you're right. It would have been super powerful.
To have
done that. Well, is there anything else? No, I believe we might have exhausted that topic.
We polished this mirror as much as we can.
And then I think it's time to go and drink some beer and watch some football.
Yeah.
Okay, all right then. Well, in that case, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for listening. From myself, Terry DeFallon, and from Graham Sibley, and from Derek Mantle, it's goodbye.
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 Thanks very much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode and want to hear more of our podcasts, then our website, whompodsdestroy.com, contains our entire archive. So do help yourself to some more Trek chat. You can also find links to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and the RSS feed for any other podcatcher, should you choose to subscribe. If you're not the subscribing type, then you can enter your email address in the form on the website, which will automatically notify you when a new episode is dropped. Next time, we'll be focusing on more parallel universes and alternative dimensions, as we discuss the infamous first season episode, The Alternative Factor.